You, you know
over,
what the
dog.
Problem? Yeah. I mean, what's the deal? It's over.
Show
it ain't over.
You're
gonna block the camera. Where you at? Where's all of Cowboys fans?
Where's
all
the Cowboys
fans?
How about them Cowboys? How about them Cowboys?
Welcome out to the second edition of the Sports Hour podcast. Peyton Taylor, alongside a large cast of characters, excited for our first in-person recording. Grady, Toby, Chuck, Buzz, Adam Garrett this week. Guys, what's going on?
It's been a long day, but I'm glad to finally get it going. First day of classes, back on campus. Feel the energy and glad to be back with the guys.
Oh man, second it, dude. I'm so glad to be back, and it's really nice getting to see everybody. I haven't seen each other in a while, so it's good to be around you guys.
Yeah, I hadn't seen y'all guys in a while. Really excited to see y'all and be able to do this in person. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's just good to be in person, just see everybody's emotions when we're talking. So I'm looking forward to doing it in person this time.
Well, I'm new, so I wanted to be on the last episode, but I was in College Station, so I'm ready to get to it. Glad school's back and ready to get basketball season on with and SEC.
That's tough. That's tough being in College Station.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Big guy on campus.
Oh, yeah. Look, y'all know we're back in Oxford and it's college time. When you drive through the square at 11:30, you have to worry about hitting somebody walking out in front of you.
Ain't that the truth?
Nobody. I just came through. We're recording this at midnight, by the way, if y'all don't know. I just came through, and I had like five people walk out in front of me. I'm thinking, I'm about to go to jail. I'm about to hit somebody.
You're about to murder somebody. Yeah.
That's a normal night in Oxford.
Yes, a normal night.
But guys, let's move into the first thing, and really the big thing that is to talk about, man. I don't know about y'all. I watched most of the wild card this week in the NFL, and it was a fantastic weekend of football.
Yeah, it was.
Unless you're a Patriot, unless you're a Patriots Cowboys fan.
I am neither.
Cowboys fans.
It was a weekend for seven seeds. That's what I learned.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to talk about the seven seed later, but really, let's kind of wrap up it one by one. Raiders and Bengals. To me, that was the game of the weekend. It's a fantastic game. Two teams that. are on the rise. Bengals, I have to say, you know, you always kind of have that second team if your team gets eliminated from the postseason. And hopefully the Titans eliminate the Bengals next weekend. But if the Titans were to lose, I may be rocking with Joey B the rest of the way. That team's fun to watch.
I'm the same way. That's Titans are my team too. But the Bengals, that's a scary matchup. They're getting hot. Joe Burrow is just – he has really turned it on the last couple weeks of the season. He's going to be an elite quarterback for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I love what the AFC North the whole year. It's the Ravens. It's the Browns. Maybe it's the Steelers. It was never mentioned to be the Bengals. 2 years in the past, I mean, they draft first and draft Joe Burrow. Everybody's like, well, maybe in a few years they'll be in the hunt. These guys won the AFC North, and now they're winning games in the playoffs in a two-year short stint. So – I'm excited to see what not they only do this year, but in the years to come.
And I know we're talking about Joe Burrow, and you know he's that dude. Joe Burrow, he's that guy. I like Joe Burrow. The dude I really think about is Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase is a superb athlete. He played so good that game, and he was really a key factor on why.
He's the rookie of the year.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Of course.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't think that. And Ja'Marr had a fantastic game, and Joe did too. What really surprised me in that game was the Bengals' defense. Raiders run the ball really well, especially in the back half of the season, and they just did a great job. I mean, they really kept the game, even when the Bengals' offense stalled out a little bit late, couldn't find – I mean, the Bengals only scored 6 points after halftime, scored 20 in the first half. Bengals' defense really held down the stretch.
They really did.
The Raiders only had, according to ESPN right here, only had 14 carries as a team total for 103 yards. That's not a lot of carries. Forced Drew Carr to throw the ball 54 times. That's unheard of. Like, it's hard to win a football game being one-dimensional like that.
When you get behind, you really lose the running game, and that's the kind of position the Raiders found themselves in. Offense got going quick, and then really the Bengals defense did a great job holding it back.
I do respect the Raiders, though, as the year went along. They lost their head coach, lost a key receiver, lost a key defensive player, I think, on some charge. So, I mean – getting through that adversity and getting to the playoffs like they did through that tough time. I mean, I'm
Derek Carr's that dude.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, Derek Carr proved this year that all the people that called that the Raiders need to go get somebody else, they're wrong.
And I know, too, I know this isn't like a religious podcast, but, like, I love how Derek Carr is a strong, devout Christian in a lot of his ways, too, talking about how you hate the sin, not the sinner. I respect him a lot for that as well, too, as just a person as well.
Great dude. And, I mean, really, you talked about that, and that's been the talk of a lot of people, that the interim over in Las Vegas. You would have to think he has a shot at the head coaching job after taking a team with this much drama, taking them winning against the Chargers and a win against Gideon, and then giving the Bengals all they want, getting down inside their 20-yard line.
That was really week zero, though. If you think about Chargers, Raiders, if whoever won that game got into the playoffs, they won that game and got in. I mean, that was huge by the interim coach getting that win. I'm not sure on his name.
I just can't pronounce it. I'm going to be honest with you.
And I know when we talked about Derek Carr, too, he had a phenomenal game. I mean, he threw for 310 yards, but kind of coming back where he's talking about one-dimensional, he really was. You got a guy in Josh Jacob in the backfield, and he's not getting the ball really all game. And so when you have to spread yourself out and you're trying to throw the football because you're chasing after it, I think they were down 20-3 at one point, it kind of locked your offense in where you couldn't really do anything. You know, they had shut you down so much that once you had a chance to run the football, you couldn't really do anything, so you had to throw the football.
Yeah, he had 13 carries for 83 yards. That's a little over six. That's about 6.5 yards a carry. That's pretty efficient. But just getting down like that, you're not able to keep that second dimension of your offense going, and that just kind of, in my opinion, kept them out of the W column.
You move on to the next week, and there's not going to be much to talk about here except one thing. Bills just absolutely smoked the Patriots. I mean, yes. Just – destroyed the Patriots. I think we all picked the Bills except Garrett, and I think Garrett was awesome on that one.
I just like Mac Jones. That's just
Mac Jones awesome this year. Really, you watch that game, Mac Jones suffered a lot of drops.
Yeah.
But dude, the Bills.
He shows glints of being great.
The main thing I have to say about this game, who else was wrong about Josh Allen? When he got drafted, I did not think Josh Allen would last longer than 5 years in the league.
I agree. And the Josh Allen thing, I do. He's a top three quarterback in the league. But all these people jumping off the Mac Jones bandwagon just like that after that game, he's a young rookie quarterback. He's not supposed to be. I mean,
didn't
sure,
play bad.
No, he didn't. And people were already saying, like Colin Cowherd the other day said, they need to drop him, get rid of him, pick somebody up in the draft. I'm thinking, he's a young guy. Give him a few years. Belichick will build around him, and he'll be that dude. Just give him some time.
Yeah,
that's how Tom Brady started out.
No, yeah. I mean, Josh Allen, 5 touchdowns, 4 incompletions, had more touchdowns than incompletions. That's insanity. Now, and I don't know if y'all saw this. The Bills were the first team in NFL history this weekend to go an entire game without punting, kicking the field goal, or turning the ball over. They scored a touchdown on every single drive until the final drive of the game where they took 3 knees.
And that makes me look forward to next week, too, with the Bills and the Chiefs. But go ahead, Tony.
And I think, too, when you talk about it, when you talk about how good Josh Allen was, and Josh Allen is good, you know, he also had 65 yards on the ground. Which, when you think of Josh Allen, you think of more of a pocket passer, but he kind of gives you that option that he can move about in the pocket and extend plays.
Oh, Josh Allen's got – he was a really good runner, especially for his size. It kind of – you know, when we watched Corral at Ole Miss this year, Allen's got that big body size. He lowers his shoulder when he runs the football.
He
doesn't really look to slide. He's that guy that, I mean, he's extremely mobile. He'll lay down his shoulder and he'll fight for those extra yards. It really makes him just even harder to game plan for.
Yeah, and the fact that the Bills put up 47 points on a Belichick-led defense, that's what he takes pride in, is their defense. And yeah, I agree. All year people were saying Patriots are the team in the AFC. They're the team, and like, just they didn't look like in the playoffs to me. I thought the Bills. Everybody said that, you know, the Patriots are back. I'm like, no, they're not. They're not. Still, Josh Allen's still there, so I'm with the Bills. So.
You know, you move on to the next one, and Eagles and Bucks, I didn't think there was really much to talk about. I think, you know, now this is where I want to spam, because we're about to get into the 2-7 games, and this is where I kind of want to talk about it. Eagles, Bucks, Steelers, Chiefs. Neither one of them very competitive at all. The Steelers and Chiefs were for about a quarter. Is the 7 seed already looking like a bad idea for the NFL?
It does, but for me, I feel like in that 2-7 game, I feel like both teams had to establish a run. And I told Buzz, the Steelers are going to run. Najee Harris is going to have 150 rushing yards to win this game. The Eagles are number one in rush yards in the NFL. They didn't establish a run. Like you said, these 7 seeds, the guys that are 9-7, 8-8 getting in the playoffs, aren't what is good for the NFL. I mean, you get to have more games, have more broadcasts, have more money, but is that necessarily really good for the NFL? And in my honest opinion, I don't think so.
Can I just say, like, I want to point back to, you know, 6-7 weeks ago when everybody was hating on Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes carried that Chiefs team. Chiefs are honestly looking like Super Bowl contenders after that game.
No, yeah, I think they are too.
You know, he comes off over 400 yards, 5 touchdowns he accounted for. He played like an MVP. And I just love Patrick Mahomes. He's arguably the best quarterback in the league right now. I think the Chiefs, really, if they can just stay competitive, the defense can hold up, they honestly could take it all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, but that's going to be the key thing. This Chiefs defense, it's not been very good at a lot of points this year. But, you know, you look going back to that argument on, you know, the 7-seed, it kind of reminds me of the are there too many bowl games argument.
Right.
And you know, for one thing, I don't expect a 7-seed to be a 2-seed anytime soon. I don't expect that. But at the same time, it is also – it's more football. And you know, that's the thing I think you take into consideration. But even, you know, looking back and forth, I'm more playing devil's advocate. It also does create the possibility of feel-good stories. You know, for instance, Big Ben doesn't finish out in the playoffs if it's not that 7-seed this year.
Right, right. Well, then again, too, if the Jacksonville Jaguars don't beat the Indianapolis Colts in that last week, the Steelers wouldn't be there anyway, but –
look, if the Raiders just wouldn't have kicked that field goal, they would have kneeled. We would have had a tie game that would have led to
– if the Chargers coached and called a timeout, then
– I still think they'd run it even without the timeout. I do.
But, I mean, they had to – they had their – where were they at? Like on their own 40?
Yeah.
With about 40 seconds to go? So, I mean, they couldn't even kick the field goal from there anyways, though. So, I mean, I don't know. I just think that it just worked out that way.
But, boys, now it's time. If I may. How about them Cowboys, ladies and gentlemen?
Well, you know, as a Giants fan, it makes me happy. You know, I try to be impartial. I try to. But when the Cowboys lose, America is happy.
In the way they lost, too.
Yeah, there is only one section of the United States that loves the Dallas Cowboys, and that is Dallas, Texas.
And Starkville, Mississippi.
Yeah, Starkville, Mississippi.
Just because of that. Reason.
How can you be considered America's team when the whole country hates you?
I've never understood that either. I hate the Cowboys.
Well, and talking about that game, too, is Jimmy G did not have a very good game. You know, that was really the defense that the Niners had that kind of kept them in, kept them on pace. You know, he only had about 200 yards. No touchdowns he accounted
for. Threw that huge interception that nearly the Cowboys right back
into it.
He
did. And then I think, you know, Prescott, he played decent, had about 250 yards. I think he threw a touchdown. But, you know, he just – it was almost like he was jittery. Like, it was like nothing really worked for him.
Yeah, what about the QB draw, Ben? I didn't really understand that.
Okay, here's the thing. The play call, I don't think in itself was bad. And really, I mean, you're thinking, get as many yards as you can. Dak went too deep. All right, let's pick up 10 yards. That way we can run a post concept in the end zone. We're not just throwing up a Hail Mary. And I think Dak went a little bit too deep with it for the ball to get.
And, you know, I think also, too, that it's like a tell of the tape of that game is that did you know that the Cowboys actually set the record for most penalties in a game?
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
I read that today, and it was like a record-setting amount of penalties in the playoff game. They have the most.
Well, and that's a conviction against Mike McCarthy. You know, the reason Jerry Jones said he hired McCarthy was because he was a top-caliber coach with Super Bowl experience. And then you have a team that comes out, and regardless if they set that record or not, I did not know that, had a unbelievable amount of penalties. I can pull it up right here. They had 14 penalties for 89 yards.
Yes.
In a wild card game where you're at home, that is completely unacceptable.
Agreed. And you could almost say maybe the pressure got to them, that they were at home, you know, they were the higher seed. Niners coming in, haven't really played the best. I mean, they played decent. They come in. And is it almost like the pressure got to them? Is it almost like the Cowboys on that stage, you know, you win the East, you know, you're set up, you're like, oh, these guys are supposed to go far. Everybody's kind of picking you to go far. I myself did. And then you just kind of lay an egg.
You know, an interesting stat that I saw, you know, we all kind of look back at Tony Romo, and a lot of us remember Romo for not winning in the big games. In his first six years as a starter, he was 1-3 in the playoffs. And Dak's first 6 years as a starter, 1-3 in the playoffs.
You know, and I also like to throw this stat out, too. In the past 20 years, the Cowboys have only won 3 playoff games. But the Giants have won 10.
Now, let me say, Dak, I don't think, is the problem here. I think Dak is a fringe top 10 quarterback in this league. I don't think he's maybe even for sure top 10. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I don't think he's the problem here. The defense, I don't think is the problem here. Dallas defense was really good all year, especially, I mean, Diggs had an unbelievable year, you know, in terms of intercepting the ball when he didn't give up 80-yard touchdowns trying to go for the ball. You know, I just don't really know what the issue was there for Dallas.
I'm going to go back to Toby. How can you, as a professional athlete, say that the pressure gets to you? You're the Dallas Cowboys. You're playing at Jerry's World. You're the home team against a quarterback in Jimmy G, who is a mid-tier quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback. You have to win that game for the Cowboys. You won your division. It's a playoff game at home. That's the game you're supposed to win. You're not supposed to lose those
games. I've got a rebuttal for you there, Buzz. You can watch the video of the 49ers coming out of the locker room. They came in with house money for that game. They came in thinking they didn't have a care in the world. They were going to play as hard as they could. They came out, and they were up 23-7 going into the fourth. Exactly, with house money. 23-7. We're going to go in there, we're going to punch them in the mouth. And if they didn't have those turnovers and different things in the fourth quarter, they would have blown them out. It was a blown-out game. People want to go to that one play at the end. It was a blowout.
If your team has nothing to lose.
People had turned the TV off. I mean, that last play of the game, if you let a game come down to one play at the end, then it's your own fault. I've heard that a lot of old people say that. I feel like it wasn't just that one play. You need to look at the game as a whole. You said that 14 penalties for 89 yards. There's a whole lot more problems than what meets the eye with that last play of the game.
And also, you can make a statement, too, that, you know, Dak Prescott did a lot in that game. He kind of facilitated the offense by himself. But I'm like, you got a guy in the backfield in Ezekiel Elliott. He had 12 carries. He got the ball 12 times.
For 31 yards.
Yeah. I don't understand how you can have a guy with that much talent and you're not feeding him the rock.
Okay, that much salary.
Wait, here's the thing. Hold on. 12 carries for 31 yards. That's under 3 yards carry. That's not just feeding him. That's a poor performance on Ezekiel Elliott's part. Because let's be completely honest here. Ever since Ezekiel Elliott got his massive contract extension, he has been a complete disappointment for the Dallas Cowboys.
I don't want a fantasy football team.
Look, if he is disappointing in fantasy, then he is disappointing for everybody.
Everything about me with the second pick, I take Saquon Barkley. I definitely know the
Cowboys, though, I think Pollard's at RB1 next year.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah. I think they should trade Zeke, get some draft picks, something.
Who's going to take that contract? Running backs are replaceable in the NFL. For the most part. Unless you are a Derrick Henry or a Christian McCaffrey or a Saquon Barkley, you are replaceable.
Well, I think, too, you know, Ezekiel Elliott's only been in the league, what, 4 years, 5 years?
I think he's five.
He's a guy that still has tremendous upside, but he has always been a running back, even at Ohio State, is you have to get him in rhythm. You have to feed him the ball before he can actually break out and move. But if you're only giving him to 12 carries and he's barely touching the rock, I mean, how are you going to be able to start building that momentum if you're not touching the football?
And I agree with that. That's a good take.
But I have to say this, Toby. If you get it 12 times, you only run it for like 2.5 yards a run. That's like saying, all right, you go shoot the ball 20 times, you only make 2 shots. You going to keep feeding that guy?
But, I mean, you also, too, on the 12 carries, they wasn't like in rhythm. They would be like one carry. Dak would throw the football 4, 5, 6 times. Then you get another carry.
Okay, think about this, too. It was 23-7 going in the fourth quarter. You can't run the ball when you're down. You have to throw the ball.
Even before that, coming in the first, second, and third quarter, they were not running the football at all. Dak Prescott was moving around the pocket, but they didn't really even try the attempts.
Well, look at his season as a whole, though. I feel like Pollard would have a better season than Zeke.
I mean, he was a 1,000-yard rusher.
Look, here's
a 1,000-yard rusher when you get 31 yards in the playoffs.
Here's the main thing. You know, in a playoff game at home, Cowboys as a team carried the ball 21 times, ran for 77 yards, 3.7 yards carry. If you're at home, you can't – running the ball for 3.7 yards carry is acceptable.
Five of those attempts, four come from Prescott and one came from CeeDee Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you took away 6 carries away from Ezekiel Elliott.
Your running backs had 16 carries for 45 yards.
Yeah.
So, you know, either way.
Cowboy fans, I have y'all help. And it's one word. Snoop. Draft that man. Trade Zeke for picks.
Wow, that's a hot take.
Toby draft Jerrion Ealy.
That's a hot take. All right.
And you know what's crazy is, honestly, Ealy would fit that system because he can maneuver around a lot better than Zeke can because Zeke's more of a north-south guy. Ealy's an east-west guy. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you wanted to draft someone like that, I wouldn't necessarily take a chance. I'd probably look for somebody in free agency.
So let's move on. We still have a lot to talk about, really. And I don't feel like there's much to talk about with this one. Rams and Cardinals. Rams blow out Arizona at home. Los Angeles looked like the team we expected them to be all year. And Arizona looked nothing like the team we saw in the first 7 weeks of the season.
Arizona is the Notre Dame of professional football. Going to do really good in the regular season, make it to the playoffs maybe, and just choke out the bowl game or whatever.
Odell Beckham Sr. was right. Get my mans on a team that he can compete on, and he will do it. Six touchdowns with the Browns in, like, how many years was it? Was he there? 2 years?
Two years.
And then he's played with the Rams for six games, and he's had six touchdowns.
Six or seven.
I mean, what stats don't lie. So, I mean.
When I look at it, too, you know, I saw a thing. It was like Kyler Murray is decommitted from Arizona to commit to playing.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, I mean, he played okay. But I think also it comes back to, did the pressure get to a young quarterback?
Well, and also, I have to remember, that was top target and DeAndre Hoskins out for the rest of the season. Arizona really needs to draft some help in the wide receiver corps. Without Larry Fitz way gone as a leader and as production in that offense. When DeAndre goes down, you're looking at Christian Kirk, and Kirk's a good wide receiver too. Maybe wide receiver three. He is no wide receiver one. And you've got to have, I believe in today's NFL, you have to have three very reliable receivers because you're running a lot of three receiver sets.
Yeah. Well, watching that game too, it almost like Kyler Murray kind of, they limited him a little bit. You know, he wasn't maneuvering out as much as he did all season. They kind of kept him one-dimensional and just kind of stayed in the pocket, didn't move much. I mean, when he did get pressure, he, of course, rotated out. But it was almost like they closed the playbook for him to try to see if he could get more consistency. And they didn't really take the chain off.
Well, my thing is, if you look at the Rams roster, just base level, how do you beat these guys? On offense, you have Sonny Michel, Matthew Stafford, who some people say is an average quarterback, Odell Beckham Jr., Cam Akers. That dude had
Cam Akers was
lights out. Cooper Kupp had just a legendary season, record breaking in so many different facets. Then on defense, Von Miller,
Aaron Donald.
Yes, I mean it's just Jalen Ramsey. But yes, so just a star studded cast. I mean, where do you go at
Sam Darnold?
Yes, Aaron Donald.
Oh man, I think we found our title for the episode right
Sam
there.
Darnold.
Sam Darnold. Los Angeles DM.
And when we talk about, you know, we come back even last week and I talked about the guys that anchor defenses. Aaron Donald's a dude that's going to anchor your defense.
He's
arguably the best defensive tackle in the NFL.
Arguably, I think. Unarguably,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, and he really showed up in that game. He made a lot of pressure coming in on the middle, and it was just like, really that defense just kind of locked in because he was locked in.
So let's move into the division now because I know we got a lot of topics besides the NFL we want to talk in the limited time we have left. Let's get to our predictions. By the way, you know, if you follow us at our social media, I'm going to shout those out real quick on Instagram and Twitter at Sports Hour Pod. We posted brackets of our picks. Chuck did not get his in. He was busy with baseball duties. So the five of us, me, Toby, Garrett, Grady, Buzz, we posted our brackets. The person with the worst picks throughout the entire NFL postseason is going to jump into the cold February pool at the quarters here in Oxford, and we're going to put it on our social media. So that's going to be a good time. We all said 5-1, except for Garrett, who sits at 3-3. I just checked that. So Garrett is not looking great right now. So he needs a rebound in
He's
the division.
He's got cold feet right now.
It don't bother me. I jump in it every day of the week.
Look. All right, so let's start going in order of how they're going to be played. 3:30 CBS, Saturday, Bengals, Titans. This is the postseason game. As a fan, obviously, I'm looking forward to it. But maybe just in a general matchup, this might be my favorite matchup of the weekend.
Yeah, I think really because I want to see what the Titans are going to do on defense.
Not to interrupt you, Toby. Talking about the defense, this is the first time all season the Titans have all 22 starters on the depth chart together in one game.
That's awesome. And I think, how are they going to contain Joe Burrow? How are they going to move, like, create pressure on Joe Burrow? Because, like, if you give Joe Burrow time in the pocket, he's going to dot you up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Titans, if they're going to win the football game, they have to get pressure on him. They have to contain, maybe keep the ball, you know, 15 yards less. Like you can't really have those big plays in
the game. Well, and the Titans have been able to do that this year. Last year, one of the worst pass rushes in the league. You get Bud Dupree, Harold Landry has an amazing season, and the Titans are in the upper half of the NFL pass rush. But like I said, you know, the Bengals have their, I think you would all say, based on what we thought in the preseason, the Bengals O-line has outperformed what we thought. We thought they were going to be the worst line in football.
Right.
And they've outperformed what they've done and what most people thought they would do.
I think also a key point, too, would be flip it around. How do the Bengals stop the Titans? Derrick Henry's coming back. How are you going to stop that guy? Derrick Henry, AJ Brown, they got those guys coming back.
That's going to be a tough matchup. Winter is coming.
Right.
All right, so anybody else got any comments on this game?
How healthy? Like, what Derrick Henry are we going to see? I mean, is he going to be a difference maker? Is he going to be a decoy? I mean, I think his presence will make a difference, even if he's, you know, not 100%. You got to respect Derrick Henry if he's back there.
So I also want to talk, too, real quick on that game, Moneyline 3.5.
Yes.
You know, Titans are favored. Is the Titans going to be able to, you know, cover that spread and then kind of rise to the
You would talk about the day in line, Toby.
I would. You know, NFL is kind of interesting because, you know, now it's kind of been more intertwined.
Look, I don't gamble, but betting lines are always fun to pick the over under and see if people are going to cover the spread.
It does surprise me how close that is.
Yes, I would agree. At home, you know, number one seed, I'm surprised with that as well.
What do we say, Chuck?
We're all going to pick
the over.
Life's too short to take the under.
We're all going to pick, like I said, Chuck's not in this contest because he could not get his bracket in time, but he obviously is still going to pick. Let's go clockwise. Buzz, start with you.
I'm going to go Bengals. Go Bengals.
Titans. Can't go for the...
I'm going Bengals, Joe Burrow.
You know, I can't bet against Joe, man. Give me the Bengals.
So are we picking off our schedule or like just off the top of now? I'm going Bengals though.
We're gonna pick off here because going back and looking at that bracket, it got changed because the 49ers fell off the upset. So they're playing Green Bay instead of Los Angeles.
Gotcha. I'll go Bengals though.
You're going Bengals. Man, I thought I was gonna be an outsider picking. So you know what? I'm gonna change my pick. I was gonna have Bengals. I'm gonna go Titans. I'm gonna trust in the Titans. What I am worried about though, originally I was going to pick the Bengals, but because I worry about, you know, it's a great thing to have the bye. The great thing, because some people say, oh, the bye makes you rusty. I was looking at it today. No team before last year with the Bucs had made the Super Bowl without a bye, AFC or NFC, since 2012 Ravens. And the bye is incredibly important.
Also, just kind of throw out there, you know, Derrick Henry may be active.
Yes. So no, Derrick big. Henry is active.
Yeah, that's big.
He is active.
That's big.
So, but here's my thing. Like I said, the 22 starters coming back, first time they've been together all season. You know, obviously you think, great, that's amazing. They're going to be together for the first time this year. It's also a concern, what kind of chemistry are they going to have together? What kind of chemistry are these guys going to have together that, you know, everybody's been plugging and playing this year? How's it going to be? Adding Zach Cunningham later in the season, starting at linebacker now. That's completely new piece. A lot of these guys on defense might have not played with.
I could 100% see Derrick Henry going over 150.
I think you could too. Yeah. And that's what I'm going to trust, that a fresh Derrick Henry with fresh legs is going to run wild against the Bengals defense.
If you actually look against the Bengals defense this year, they haven't been particularly great against the rush.
Mm-hmm. But go back to what Buzz said, though. Is he going to be a decoy, or is he going
to
be...
No, I mean, the Titans expect him to be fully active.
100%.
They believe he's going
to
be 100%.
We were going to pound that rock.
That was why the bye was so important for the Titans to get, because he was activated. He was designated to return last week. Right. Obviously, you wanted to get him an extra week of practice coming back before you had to throw him in a playoff game. So the bye was absolutely... Might have been bigger for the Titans than anybody else this season.
If Derrick Henry isn't close to 100%, I don't see the Titans risking ending his career potentially with another injury.
49ers, Packers. Guys, I feel like you said, 49ers, you know, played really well, beat Dallas last week on the road. I don't think they'll do it again. Green Bay is my Super Bowl team in the NFC, so I'm going Packers.
I'm going Packers.
Packers are also my Super Bowl team at the NFC. At Lambeau Field, you know it's going to be cold. 49ers out in California, I don't think they're going to be ready for it. Packers.
Packers.
Go Pack, go. I mean, I'm not going to bet against Aaron Rodgers.
I like Jimmy G, but I'll go Packers.
Rams and Bucks. Guys, the Rams look fantastic. I'm picking the Rams in the upset. Go to Tampa and win.
No, I'm going Bucks. I'm not betting against Tom Brady.
Yeah, can't bet against Brady. I'm going Bucks.
Never bet against Tom Brady.
I want to pull the trigger, but you cannot bet against Tom.
Look, but you have to remember, this is a team that is without two of their top three receivers this year.
Two offensive linemen.
Two offensive linemen. Worse is might be not play this weekend.
Yeah.
This is a team that's not very healthy, and health is extremely important. And I'm not necessarily against betting against Tom Brady. I'm betting against the Bucs having guys to fill these
holes. In the words of the famous Lee Corso, by field goal. Give me the Bucs.
By field goal. Great.
Is Leonard Fournette healthy?
He did not play last week, but I believe they're expecting him to play this week because he was possibly going to play last week. He didn't, so I would expect he's active this week.
I'm going to go Rams because it's my Super Bowl team, Super Bowl winning team. So, Rams.
Ooh. All right. First time I've heard of the Rams, I think, win Super Bowl. We'll watch that one. Could go up in flames this weekend.
Good.
Final game, Bills and Chiefs, and I think this is the game that has the most public intrigue. Buzz, who
I'm going to go Bills. I mean, I like the way Josh Allen played, and like you said, the Chiefs' defense. I mean, they played the Steelers last week. You can't really judge their defense off the Steelers. So I'm going to go Bills. I like Josh Allen.
Bills.
Bills.
You know, the Bills have quickly become one of my favorite teams. Give me the Mafia. Bills by 2 touchdowns.
Circle the wagons.
I feel like last week with the Bills, they ran the ball really well. If they can redo that this week, I feel like the win. I'm going Chiefs. I can't bet against Patrick Mahomes. I can bet against Tom Brady. I'm not betting against Patrick Mahomes.
The Bills, at the beginning of the year, I said the Bills were my AFC team to go to the Super Bowl. I think they might be better than the Chiefs.
I think Josh Allen makes too many mistakes.
But Patrick Mahomes has led this team to the Super Bowl the last 2 years, won them one, led them to the AFC Championship the year before. Until somebody dethrones him in the AFC, I'm not going to bet against the Chiefs, especially with how on fire they've been lately. I'm going to take the Chiefs by a field goal.
Come on.
Not so fast. Not so fast. Oh, man. But anyway, I think that's going to wrap it up for us in the NFL. Let's quickly maneuver over to college. The D1 baseball rankings that came out today. And guys, incredibly interesting to me, really. And we got Chuck here. Chuck, if y'all don't know, Chuck is a manager for the Ole Miss baseball team. So I'm sure, just like a lot of the team, he's been scouting some of these teams already, knowing who some of these guys are returning, who they're bringing in. And Texas at 1, Arkansas at 2, Vanderbilt at 3, Mississippi State at 4, Ole Miss round out top 5, and all SEC top 5 when Texas enters the league. But either way, SEC reigns supreme in the top 5 of the rankings. That's kind of what we've gotten used to, but some of these teams being where they are is very surprising to me.
I'll go first on that with Mississippi State being at 4. I always feel like the guy that's on top of the hill to end the season, you should be able to knock them back off the next season. I mean, we're all Ole Miss guys. Chuck works for Ole Miss baseball. But if you're the guy at the top of the hill, I believe that if you want to be that guy, you need to knock them off. I mean, that's just my personal opinion about that.
And I think, the reason why they put Texas there is Texas had such a good recruiting class.
They did.
It was a huge recruiting class. What was it? I think it was number one, correct? Number one, number two, something like that. It was top 5. And I think, you look at it even last year, they played really well. And they had a lot of people return. So, number one, it's kind of iffy. They won't stay there forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's only the preseason, like we said.
Chuck, what are some of the things that stick out to you? Now, this is one that I've heard a lot of the baseball, guys talking about, some of the people that are, follow college baseball very closely. After they hired Arizona's head coach and he brought basically his entire 9 position players with him, LSU at 8, I believe they're going to live up to that ranking this year.
I think LSU at 8 is kind of a joke and a slight to them. I think LSU should definitely be top 5, if not switch them with Vandy at 3. Honestly, LSU is going to be a problem in the West. Some other notes I had is Arizona. They got Arizona ranked at 15. I don't think Arizona should be ranked that high, like you said. Their coach just left. A lot of players transferring. Jacob Berry lost one of the better hitters, if not one of the best hitters in college baseball last year. Played at Arizona. He transfers to LSU. That's just one right there. Like, I don't think Arizona's 15. Another thing, I think Dallas Baptist at 22. I think they're top 15, top 12 baseball club right now. I think Dallas Baptist is going to be really good.
Just a few innings away from making Omaha last year.
And Dallas Baptist, not a lot of people know the name unless they follow college baseball closely, but that's been a good baseball program for a while. My last one right here is Tennessee at 19. I think they should crack top 15. I really think they should switch between Tennessee and Arizona there. But like we said at the beginning, it's preseason, and none of it really matters now. What matters is the final at whoever makes Omaha.
We talked about I heard somebody talking about it today. It was on Super Talk. They were talking about this ranking that came out. And you look at Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and Ole Miss, 3 of those top 5, they all have one thing in common. Return a lot of position players, a lot of questions in their pitching room. And I think Vanderbilt loses Leiter and Kumar Rocker. Arkansas loses Copps, who was the best pitcher in baseball last year. Ole Miss loses Hoglin and Nikhazy. And, you know, Sims is moving from Mississippi State even. I heard something about him possibly moving into being in a weekend starting role. So not sure if they'll have to do that early in the season to try to find a rotation piece. So that's kind of what I talk to you guys and really Chuck. I mean, especially about Ole Miss, because this has been the big question, I think, a lot. Ole Miss might return the best offense in college baseball. I think we could all agree with that for the most part. The question's in the pitching.
I think Mike Bianco looked at that, you know, and, you know, coming off a good recruiting class where we focused a lot on pitching. And we kind of was like, you know, we need some depth there. And I think Bianco has addressed that. I haven't really, you know, looked at a lot of practices, but, you know, from what I've heard, you know, we got guys that's throwing. And I think Ole Miss, you know, really, if we can get those guys that, you know, 1, 2, and 3 that can start on the weekend and be kind of more clutch and consistent guys, we could be good down the stretch.
I love that point, Toby, about starting pitching. But if you're an Ole Miss baseball fan, what about relief pitching? That's what I want to know about. What about relief pitching this year? Taylor Broadway was that guy. Not only that guy, he was the only guy. So who is
don't disrespect Jack Doucher. Don't
Wes Burton. But I'm not going to. But we started Taylor Broadway in a
Super regional.
Game 3.
Season on the line.
Because we didn't have anybody else. Yeah. So, Chuck, can you give us some information? Can you give us some information on that?
Our bullpen will be very good this year. We got some really good arms. Guys returning really good. Another year in the system, getting better. Some new guys. Got some really good new guys coming in, whether it's a transfer, a true freshman, or a junior college guy. Really don't want to go into too much depth with that, but the bullpen will be very good this year.
Coming off that, I'd like to just ask, you know, how deep is Ole Miss that if one of those top, you know, 3-4 guys goes down, how deep could we be to pull off the bullpen and put them in the starting role?
We're really deep. This is my third year. This is the deepest our pitching staff has been, in my opinion.
Is Diamond going to be that guy this year?
I think so. I think he's going to be a very good pitcher for us, elite even.
I'm really excited to see, because I think he's going to probably step into that ace role, correct?
Yeah, probably. I think so. There's a lot of guys fighting for it right now.
Look,
there's
Diamond,
3 or 4 right now that is interchangeable at this
Diamond
point.
Diamond had all the talent in the world last year. I think that was extremely noticeable. And, you know, looked really good in 2020 before the season got called off. Diamond has all in the world. It seemed like last year maybe just something not right mentally in him. I'm hoping, you know, had some better performances down the stretch, hoping that that can, you know, push him to be even better this year and be kind of that ace guy for them.
Well, when you're behind those guys like Hoagland and Akasey, I mean, anybody doesn't look like they're up to snuff. I mean, other than Leder and Kumar Rocker, I mean, that was the best 1-2 punch, I think, not only in the SEC but in the nation.
You know, and I think, too, you know, we had the pleasure of going to a lot of Ole Miss baseball this year. It was really the first time I got to, like, zero in and watch them. I watched Diamond a few times, and, you know, probably the first, second, and third inning, he pitched really well. But, you know, he gave up 1, 2, 3 hits, and it almost seemed like he kind of lost control. So what happened is he would go 5 innings and Bianco would pull him. I don't know, can you settle him down and say when he gets to that back half, when he goes 6, 7 innings, can he stay locked in the entire time?
You know, obviously, as Ole Miss fans, we hope that this is going to be the year we go back to Omaha. But, you know, a tougher – looking at it the other day, a tougher schedule we've got, you know, especially – in terms of who we have to visit in the league. Chuck, I don't know if you know that off the top of your head. I know we host State, but I think we have to go to LSU. We'll go to Arkansas. I mean, that's 2 right off the bat. Maybe two of your toughest competitions in the West.
That's a series I have circled completely, is how is Ole Miss, you know, even where we're at in the rankings, because I know it's a little later series, like when Ole Miss goes to Fayetteville, can we arise and beat them there?
Look, here's the schedule. I'll pull it up right here. For Ole Miss, this is your weekend SEC series. You've got Auburn on the road, Tennessee at home, Kentucky on the road, Alabama at home, South Carolina on the road, State at home, Arkansas on the road, Missouri at home, LSU on the road, and you finish out with A&M at home. Most of your tougher contests besides State look like they're probably going to be on the road. You know, that's going to be a tough burden to bear.
Well, we'll really see how good this team is if we can go there and win. You know, I've had the pleasure. I'm actually going to Fayetteville. I'm going to that series, and I'm really excited for it because – that's really the first time I get to see Ole Miss outside of Oxford. And I'm really excited to see, can they step up and win it? Because that's going to be a huge game. That could have top 5 implications.
We talk about the West in football. I mean, the West in baseball, I mean, shoot. It's
maybe
just
even
just
more deep than football.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, you don't have the bottom feeders. Everybody in the SEC is really good at baseball.
Talk about Vanderbilt in football. Vanderbilt in baseball?
No.
Not a puppy anymore.
Vanderbilt in academics? I mean, I think they beat us on that one too.
Vanderbilt basketball.
You know, I'm glad you say that, Garrett, because let's segue into the very next part of Ole Miss basketball.
Just got beaten every facet of the game, as you saw. Had a little spurt when we put five guys in because they got another paint score. And it's our inability to we can't really play our 1-3-1 because of the toughness in our zone and back to double fist. And so tonight we just had to guard a man-to-man, and they made some good shots, just drove the ball, put us on our heels, and then our inability to score it really around the goal. So give Missouri all the credit.
And obviously tonight taking the loss to Missouri, and you know, whether you put it one way, and Ole Miss is battling through a lot of injuries right now, but it was just a disappointing loss all the way around. You know, obviously Missouri shoots the lights out, only missed 19 shots, but again, you struggle a little bit on the offensive end. They outboard you, and you know, really just not, you know, coming off of back-to-back losses, including a heartbreaker against Auburn, not really the way you wanted it.
Well, just I think it's just a chemistry thing right now, because we got five guys from last year's team come back, and the other three or four are freshmen.
And one of them's Robert Allen, who's out for the year.
Robert Allen tore his ACLs, MCL, anything in the knee you could think of, he tore, and he's a big loss. Like, he contributed like 5 points and 11 rebounds.
He was our main rebounder.
And he was our main rebounder and hustle guy. And then Jarkel Joyner being out right now with back problems, he's a big loss. That's scoring that we need. And just leadership right now. He's a seasoned veteran. We're on the come up. We're getting there. Just a lot of young guys right now.
You know, me and Grady were at the state game, not last Saturday, but the Saturday before that. And we talked about just, especially in the backcourt, just how young this squad is.
Yeah. I mean, listen to this. Deshaun Ruffin, freshman. Jamin Breckfield, sophomore. James White, freshman. Grant Slayton, freshman. Matthew Morrell, sophomore. All these guys, freshmen, sophomores, with a lot of talent.
We're only graduating three seniors. So Luis Rodriguez, Jarkel Joyner, and Nas and Ty. I forgot about Ty. But they're grad transfers, so they were going to get them 1 year anyway. But we're going to have to recruit very, very well next year just to bring in some guys to help us. Because we're going to be good in the guards, but our bigs are going to be real low next year.
And I think even tonight, when we talk about that score, you know, 78-53, we kind of got blown out of the water a little bit. Ole Miss's defense played so well the first half.
Yes.
But it's almost like we went into the locker room and we came out and we played down. I think we didn't score the last 3 minutes of the first half and then the first 4 or 5 minutes of the second half.
Missouri just couldn't miss a shot, though.
They shot 62% from the field, 57% from three. I mean, it's hard to beat a team that makes over half of their shots.
And you look even in the first half, because, you know, we can compare stats. I'm not really completely sure. But, like, watching that game there, Ole Miss played so well. You know, they were banging shots, but Ole Miss was keeping time with them. And we got them to slow down. But actually, like, that last 5 minutes of the first half, it was almost like Missouri kind of kicked it in gear and Ole Miss couldn't keep up.
I've been saying this all year, but we just play to our competition. Mm-hmm. We play to our competition every single game.
And that's the thing you see in a lot of young teams.
See, but we play good at Tennessee. At Tennessee, then we come back, we lose to Tennessee, by set five.
Overtime, yeah. Led them essentially the whole game until overtime.
Yeah, then we come back and beat State, a good State team.
Mm-hmm. Very good State team.
But they were missing one of their best players. He will be back Saturday, mm-hmm. and this is going to be a different game. But then we come back and almost beat the number four team in the nation, up 12 at half. How do you go up 12 at half to a number four team in the nation and come back and play Missouri that's a bottom feeder in the SEC and lose by 26?
Do you think also the games kind of happened earlier where we took some really early losses? Do you think that's kind of playing in to what's happening now? You know, you lose at Samford. You know, a team that nobody really knows unless you're from that area.
But
and then,
Samford was actually really, really good.
Yes,
I'm
understanding that they were good, but do you think those early losses is kind of making it where we're kind of like just playing stagnant? We're just playing like this and not moving. We're just on a straight line.
I've heard this my entire life, and a lot of you know that I'm a basketball coach's son, okay? Mm-hmm. And with that in my bloodline, somebody on that team other than the coach has to light a fire into those guys. And I'm not talking about any of the coaches' staff, any of the managers. It has to be somebody on that team to light a fire in them to say, we're not going to accept this. We're not going to accept the losses that we've had, and we're gonna be a different team. And this weekend is a prime time to show that they can be different.
This is how we were last year. I mean, we started out 1-4. Then we beat Auburn. Devontae Shuler hit a big-time game winner against Auburn. Then it just turned to tie. We won like five or six games in a row.
I think that was right after that Tennessee win.
But yeah. when you talk about that, Dante Shuler was a guy that could get you a spark.
Yes.
Right. I have not seen this year that Ole Miss has that guy to give you a spark.
I mean,
you watch him go to the bench, there's no guys that are like, keep your head up, let's go. Everybody's walking back to the bench with their head
down. We had that guy in Robert Allen, and
he went down.
Yeah. He went down.
And I agree with that. But like watching tonight, I saw Kermit Davis sat in the middle, hollering, screaming like he should, and everybody else is just sitting there.
Right.
Nobody's nodding.
Coach all the time.
Nobody's nodding their head. Nobody's moving.
It started with the game day practice that day. It was just warm ups were so lackadaisical. Just walking around, like, man, I just had school today. School started today. I mean, I understand school started today. Everybody's tired. They had to wake up really early. But we've been doing this for 6 months. I mean, 2-a-days. 6:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You're a D1 athlete. You should be ready for this game.
Watch Kermit's presser, and that's one thing he talked about. He talked about that the effort just was not there in the practice leading up to this game.
No. It's just – it was
– And I think maybe that could also come, too, that Kermit – did he not push his guys hard during Christmas break?
I'm telling you, he pushed them. I mean, we stayed the whole Christmas break. We got 3 days off. We got 24th, 25th, 26th. Came back the 27th. Practiced that Saturday. Practiced on New Year's Eve. New Year's Day. We practiced on New Year's Day, too.
But listen to this, too.
To play the third.
We, like I mentioned a minute ago, freshmen and sophomores, these guys aren't used to that Division One just battle. Not really a battle, a war. I mean, they're there. They're used to winning in high school. All right, we get New Year's, Christmas off. In college, like you said, you get 3 days off.
Yeah.
You got to come back ready to play.
And I do agree. I do agree that everybody's younger. It's a young team.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like, you know, you're getting into the meat of your schedule now. You got SEC play the rest of the year. You don't have these easy games that you can tune up.
Mm-hmm.
Something has to happen where you need to start playing to the mentality that I want to win basketball games. I don't want to be a middle of the pack SEC team.
I want to move into something about that buzz.
At the end of the day, like, you can't just use the age as an excuse anymore. I mean, you're halfway through a season. The talent, you could argue this is Kermit's most talented team roster wise. You have 2 5-stars on your roster, Jamin Brakefield and Deshaun Ruffin. So I understand they're young, but there's other young teams too. I mean, other people have freshmen too.
And it comes down to chemistry.
Yeah.
I mean, you also talk about the 5-star rating, and I know sometimes they can get it wrong, but any other team, these 5-stars come in and they take over.
Mm-hmm.
When is that guy, one of these young guys, going to take over and say, this is my team?
I think
it's hard as we got to do that, though.
I mean, we have that guy, and that would be Jarko Joyner.
Exactly.
He's our leader of the team. He needs to be on the floor. But he's not. He's hurt. But when he comes back, I think we'll have a spark.
And I also made a statement watching the game. I said this to Buzz and to Grady, that it's almost like Ole Miss plays too much team ball. It's almost like we're always just moving it out and we're not feeding the basket. We're always spreading it out. We're always looking maybe for a wide open guy. Instead of driving to the lane, trying to get to the free throw line when we're going cold, and it's just like Ole Miss likes to play stacked.
It's almost too robotic. It's
exactly.
Just play basketball.
Sometimes the best basketball can
it's
be the simplest thing.
Yes,
shoot the basketball. If you're open, shoot it. If you're double teamed, pass it out. But sometimes you're just standing there waiting for a guy to move instead of, you know, you got a wide open lane to the basket and you're not taking it.
I would say that's the biggest thing that Coach says, that we just pass it, not driving. Guys are scared. We have soft guys. We have soft guys.
Okay. You say soft guys, okay. I don't think – it doesn't have to be coach accountability. It has to be player accountability, like we were talking about a minute ago. Jarkel needs to talk to the players himself. He doesn't realize as a senior, as an older guy, as a guy that's been there and has done Kermit's system, I need to tell these guys this is what Kermit wants. These guys don't understand it yet. Deshaun, freshman, doesn't understand this yet. Brakefield, who's a transfer, doesn't understand this yet. He needs to tell them the energy that we need to play with is what we're not playing with right now.
I would say one thing. Deshaun does have that. Deshaun does
young.
Have it.
He's young. He can't lead the team to that.
He's not there yet.
Yeah.
But he has that dog in him.
And I know we're talking too about Jarkel. You know, he is injured right now. I know he's not playing. But it seems like Jarkel needs to take a bench role and sit there and say, look, you know, coming around this huddle, he needs to be that guy that's in the middle of the huddle right by Kermit Davis.
Well, he is, and then he isn't.
Well, you know, sometimes you could be that player that kind of stands off on the side. But to me personally, as a fan, I want a guy that's in the middle of it, you know, yelling just as much as the coach is.
Yeah.
Look, we've got him, and we're almost out of time, and we've got to talk about, you know, as this tonight was a big loss. But then you move into Saturday, which I think we would all agree is probably the biggest game of the season for Ole Miss and Mississippi State so far.
Yes, Mississippi State, they're coming in. Yeah. I think they beat Alabama mm-hmm. by two.
Yes.
Which was a very good game. And Tolu, I think Tolu did play, but I'm not for sure. But
I think he's expected to be back for sure.
He's coming back Saturday for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's just going to be a big matchup between him and Nasir Brooks. And that's just –
Play Florida tomorrow, State does. Ole Miss is off till Saturday. Mm-hmm. For Ole Miss, this is a chance to, you know, right the wrongs. It's like, hey, look, you know, let's be honest here. An at-large bid is
still very much available.
You've got to be nearly perfect down the stretch, but it's there. And it all starts with sweeping a Mississippi State team that's top 40 in the net. And for Mississippi State, let's also be honest with them, just being completely frank, Ole Miss is their worst loss of the season so far.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
They have a chance to right that wrong in front of the tournament committee's eyes. I think you're going to see a much different Mississippi State team, and you have to hope that you see the same Ole Miss team, because that's going to be the team that takes down Mississippi State. You got to be better on the defensive end. You can't allow as many offensive boards as you did in Oxford, because this is going to start, the hump. I expect it. They have trouble filling it up at times.
It's going
to
be packed.
I expect it to be very much packed and very lively.
It's going
to
be packed.
Yeah, I think this is this could be the turning point for both teams. State looking at possibly, if they perform the way I think they can down the stretch, just extremely talented. DJ Jeffries, Iverson Molinar, mm-hmm. Atola Smith. This is a team that could be a 6-7 seed in the tournament if they perform the way they need to. Ole Miss, you're to the point, all right, like I said, you have to be perfect.
We need Matthew Morrell like last time. He was perfect, 10 for 10 to start the game, and like 4 for 4 from 3.
We just have a hard schedule coming up.
Yeah, I looked at it. We were talking about it on the way back from the Northeast game tonight, that Ole Miss and State both have very tough schedules coming up.
Play State Saturday, mm-hmm. come off, we'll have off day Sunday. No, we won't have off day Sunday. We'll practice Sunday, play Florida the Monday, reschedule game. Mm-hmm. Practice again, then play Arkansas at home. Then practice, then play Kansas State, a good Kansas State team, mm-hmm.
yeah.
at home.
And this is big for, like I said, this is big for Mississippi State. They play Florida and Ole Miss. You've got to take both of those, because next week you're staring down the barrel of a back-to-back with Kentucky and Texas Tech both on the road. Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, what would be, even if Ole Miss, you know, we kind of sputter out and we don't make it, I think Ole Miss should really try to play Florida. If we can't, you know, if we get too far out, we need to try to get a team that's going to play spoiler to these guys and limit their opportunities to get into.
Well, look, let's be completely honest. This is a game.
Kamikaze type beat.
As Ole Miss fans, you know, how great would it be as if we were the reason why Mississippi State couldn't make the tournament?
Yeah, no, you're right.
That's a loser mentality.
Let's be honest.
I don't want to make the
you should I have know, to be motivated to be a spoiler in this game. This is your in-state rival.
This is your turning point. This is a new way.
It's been a long time since one team has beat one other team twice.
That's been swept.
We've always
football
swept.
Season.
I think you might have to go back to the Rip Ray era before that happened. And I don't even know if we swept the Rip Ray.
The last 4 years, we've swept every year.
And
not swept by our split. Split. I mean, mm-hmm.
In 2014, Ole Miss won the Egg Bowl, swept in basketball, and swept the baseball series. A win Saturday for the Rebs keeps the door open for baseball season to get a clean sweep over Mississippi State.
God bless the Rip Ray years, honestly. Yes. But anyway, we're about wrapping up. But one thing we really want to talk about, too, is speaking of Ole Miss State, guys, the Ole Miss women snapped a huge losing streak to Mississippi mm-hmm. State. And that is the win. That is, to me, the turning point for Coach Yillette's Rebel squad. They're sitting, I believe, 14-2.
Yes.
I don't remember the last time I enjoyed watching Ole Miss win.
They came on last year strong.
Mm-hmm, they did.
Strong,
towards the end of the year.
And they almost won the NIT.
Nearly pushed for a tournament spot.
Yes. They mm-hmm. lost in the NIT in the championship game mm-hmm. to a very good team. And Coach O is a very nice woman. She's a very good lady. She's a very good coach. But she's doing something special with this Ole Miss women's basketball.
And I 100% believe that, man. Coach Sho's got that team playing.
Was anybody at that game? I was not. I was watching it, but
I think I listened to it on the radio.
Was anybody there?
I was not.
Because it seemed like it was a great atmosphere.
We had practice, so I was.
It seemed like it was a fantastic atmosphere. And that's good because I've heard stories coming up from a child about how Ole Miss women's basketball used to be the show in town. This used to be what a lot of people wanted to watch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously went through some awful, awful years. So the worst team in the conference. And now Coach Yeo has got this team where you're looking at, if you perform the way you should the rest of the year, you can. You're looking at a top four or five seed.
She recruits.
Shakira Austin. She's fantastic.
She was a number four prospect out of high school. She was a five-star out of high school. And then Ja'Coria, Bracy? Is that right? Yes. She's from Ruleville Central. She was a McDonald's All-American Gatorade Player of the Year out of Mississippi. So she's got talent and
And let's say this streak was not snapped against, like, this is not the runner-up national championship team's Mississippi State, but this is not a bad Mississippi State
team. And they played close to a very good Tennessee team.
Yes, they did. This is a very good, played close against the number one team in South Carolina at the time.
Pippen beat South Florida, who beat Stanford, is the number two team in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Pippen and coming back, you know, coming about Ole Miss is Tennessee, you know, really on the two losses, they're two pretty bad losses. You come off Tennessee, you kind of get beat pretty bad. Early in the season, you get beat Belmont first game.
That's a very – you look back and you're like, that's just an outlier. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, coming down the stretch, you know, they got a lot of tough games. They got a lot of ranked teams. You play Georgia, you play Kentucky, you play LSU. It was all ranked in the top 25. Mm-hmm. Can Coach Yeo keep the momentum going to possibly beat these three ranked teams and move in to possibly a top 15 spot in the AP?
You know, losing to Tennessee, I worried about, okay, is this team going to start – hopefully not, is this team going to start skidding. They shut me up. They go win by 30 against Alabama.
They bounced back.
That's not the definition of squeaking by. That's not getting back on track. That is bouncing back emphatically.
But they beat State by 10. But they didn't lose horribly to Tennessee.
No.
It was only by 12. I think
very
it was 12.
Competitive against Tennessee.
Yes, it was very. I think it was 12 points they lost by. But
I was trying to say that I may wind up with that Kentucky game, but they're playing them at Kentucky.
Look, let's just make it clear.
We're trying to go to Lexington, but I think a real test is tomorrow. They're playing at College Station at 7 o'clock.
A very good Texas A&M team.
Can you take on the road in College Station, a hostile environment? Texas A&M does not like Ole Miss for some reason.
They do not.
Can she come out with a win? That could tell the tape for the rest of the season if we can come out with a huge win there in College Station.
And Texas A&M's students, they do show up.
No matter what.
They're
not called the 12th man for nothing. I mean,
yeah, they're a very good team.
Will that technically be a 6-man in basketball?
Sure.
Let's go for it.
Sure. Mass.
But, y'all, I think that's just about going to do it. What a fun episode. It's so nice recording in person.
It is. Good to see your lovely face.
I'm telling you.
Scruffy beard and all.
Look, you have a face for radio yourself, Toby. Thank you.
Face for podcast.
But, y'all, you know, this has been fun. I hope you guys have enjoyed it again. Want to thank you for your support on episode one. That support on episode one was phenomenal. 82 plays at this point after 1 week. I think most of it's expected. I think we said 25 was a good goal for the first week. Y'all smashed it. Thank you so much. It was incredible support. But if you're not following us, you can find us at Sports Hour Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you want to go back and listen to the first episode, it's on now available on anchor.com, anchor.fm/sportshourpod. It's on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Those links are in our profiles. But, guys, that's going to be about it for me. Any last words?
This was fun. I'm ready to see how the playoffs are going to turn like this week and when we get in next
week. I'm ready to see Garrett take that jump into the pool. I got to be honest.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Go Rebs.
I'm excited.
And go Rebs, baby.
But I think that's going to do it for Grady, for Toby, for Garrett, for Chuck, and for Buzz. I'm Peyton Taylor saying so long.